Thanks very much for that reading, and good morning, everyone. It's great to be with you this morning looking at this lovely verse, or two in Hebrews. My name is Sebastian Rabb, as it's been said. I'm the worship leader here at St. Barnabas Church. And this morning, we're thinking about keeping going with spiritual disciplines. Let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Now, last summer, just before I moved to Middlesbrough, I attempted Alfred Wainwright's Coast to Coast Walk. It's a walk right across the country, from the Lake District coast in the west to the North Yorkshire coast in the east, not far from here. And it goes across the lakes, the Yorkshire Dales and the North York Moors, some of the most breathtaking landscapes in the UK, as far as I'm concerned. It's about 180 miles. It involves about 8,000 metres of climbing. And most people do it in 10 to 14 days. I had a go at the route in 2011. With one of my brothers. We'd done basically no preparation. We were carrying far too much stuff, and we made it 80 miles across the lakes before calling it a day at Kirby Stephen with very sore feet. I did better last year. I made it 150 miles to the Lion Pub on Blakey Moor. But I'd been really struggling with bad ankle pain for a few days, and after a big plate of bangers and mash and a pint of Guinness, I somewhat lost my motivation and I decided to call for rescue. I wonder, what's the longest journey you've been on? What's the hardest journey you've ever been on? Today's Bible text talks about a different kind of journey, not a long distance walk, but a long distance run, something like a marathon. The same brother of mine is a really good runner, and he ran the York Marathon a few years ago. He was on target for a good time. He'd been training really hard, but he partially dislocated his hip halfway round the course. He was treated by St. John's Ambulance by the side of the route, and he managed to drag himself to the finish line in about 4.5 hours in agony. This is more like what we're talking about this morning, I'm afraid. This kind of race, this kind of really tough marathon. We're thinking about keeping going as Christians, and specifically as part of our Fit for Life series, keeping going with our spiritual disciplines. Our Bible text is taken from a book of the Bible called Hebrews, and Hebrews was written to first century Christians who were in danger of drifting away. We read this at the start of chapter 2. We must pay the most careful attention to what we have heard, so that we do not drift away. For the recipients of Hebrews, it's likely that they had had just enough challenge and difficulty to make discouragement, to make distraction a problem, but perhaps not quite enough overt persecution to make them really cling to Jesus. It's been interesting in our Wednesday night Fit for Life small group, some people have actually said that it's when things are really, really tough that they actually find it easier in some ways to get close to the Lord, because it's almost as if there's no other option. But what about when things just aren't that tough? What about when we're just stuck with the week-to-week challenge of everyday life? Do our spiritual disciplines really matter? We're coming towards the end of Lent now, aren't we? This is a season where we've been on a kind of journey towards Easter, following in the footsteps of Jesus, moving towards his death and resurrection. How do we guard against drifting away on the way? How do we guard against becoming discouraged, distracted, or just plain bored with spiritual disciplines? Well, as we look at just a few short verses in Hebrews in chapter 12, let's imagine we're on a kind of 9-mile run, okay? And at each mile marker, there's going to be help for the way ahead. So our first mile Let us throw off everything that hinders. Now, you might be aware, lightweight equipment is a huge business for long-distance walkers, long-distance runners. You don't want to be carrying a single gram more than you need to. For Hebrews' original audience, they were probably used to seeing people competing naked in the ancient games. Now, I don't think the writer of Hebrews is suggesting that we should practice our spiritual disciplines naked, but I do think he's perhaps trying to get us to think about anything that might be holding us back. What might be stopping us getting on with our spiritual disciplines? And there are all kinds of options, aren't there? But the thing I want to talk about for us this morning in our online digital age is distraction and instant gratification. Our attention is sold to advertising companies, isn't it? In return for the content we consume on platforms like Facebook, Google, and YouTube. And even on subscription platforms like Netflix, the advertising we are exposed to is just previews of more Netflix content. Endless tiny little boxes, hours of potential excitement flashing before our eyes. And then we wonder why the Bible seems a bit dull. When asked what he thought was his biggest competitor, do you know what the founder of Netflix said? Sleep. I know for myself, if I open my laptop or start doing things on my phone early in the morning before I've read or before I've had time to pray or even before I've done any exercise, my mind is just in a completely different place. It's kind of been stimulated and woken up by this really bright screen. And then I find it very hard to focus on anything that's less stimulating, even if it's more valuable. Lay aside every weight. I wonder, how might you like to push back a little bit against digital distraction? How might you like to get on the front foot with the content you consume? Okay, mile number two. Let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, or the sin which clings so closely. I actually find this a strangely encouraging phrase. I think it's great just to recognize that back there in the first century, the author of Hebrews knew that sin can so easily entangle. It was the same for them as it is for us now. He knew it can cling so closely. Spiritual disciplines are hard. Sin is easy. You don't drift into maturity in the Christian life, do you? You drift into sin. And friends, there's just no quick fix here, is there? But I think it is a good place to start, just to acknowledge that sin easily entangles and that we're just going to have to keep laying it to one side through repentance and faith, through confession, through receiving affirmation of the gospel from one another. We can't afford to grow cold, hard-hearted to our sin struggles. We have to keep being sensitive to sin. We have to keep laying it to one side. Think of sin as using other people as if they belong to you, or living in God's world as if it was yours. Whether it's short tempers, neediness, greed, laziness, lust, selfishness, we just have to keep paying attention to our consciences, to the conviction of the Holy Spirit, and laying to one side the sin which clings so closely. Okay, mile number three, having done this, we run with perseverance. We run with endurance. Now, he just doesn't say we float with ease or we glide with effortlessness. No, we have to go for it. We have to put the effort in. We heard from Jesus earlier in Matthew 7, the way is hard that leads to life. If being a Christian is demanding endurance from you this morning, that's a really good sign. It's a sign you've properly understood what it means to be a follower of Jesus. But also remember, mile number four, we run with perseverance the race marked out for us. What a relief. We don't have to figure it all out for ourselves. We do have to make decisions, significant life decisions that can be demanding. But the bigger picture, the race has been marked out for us. It's the race that Jesus ran. We look to his lifestyle, his teaching, his priorities, his trajectory. And as we do, we get some idea of what it should look like for us. And then, perhaps most importantly of all, mile number 5, we fix our eyes on Jesus. What we look at is what we become. What we give our attention to is the direction we'll go in. And the writer to the Hebrews is not simply giving us some motivational coaching. He's calling us to give Jesus our attention. One of our 4 key values as a church is that we're Christ-centered, isn't it? We fix our eyes on him together. Why Jesus? Well, mile number 6, Jesus is the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. All the way through Hebrews, the writer has been calling his readers to a life of faith, a life trusting Jesus. Jesus is the writer of our stories of faith, from the first page to the very last. Not only ours, but all those who have gone before us, whose lives remind us of God's faithfulness. And who do we have to trust our lives to more trustworthy than Jesus? We fix our eyes on him because he has already paved the way, pioneered the path, and then it's also as if he's there guiding us along the route as he perfects our faith. It's really important, friends, isn't it, that we remember that we only run the race within the empowering of God's grace that both starts us off, keeps us going, and gets us to the finish line. Now back to the coast to coast, Alfred Wainwright was the pioneer of that path. He was the first one to come up with it and to walk it. But he's not there helping me along the way anymore. Well, that's not what it's like with Jesus, is it? He pioneered the path and he's here helping us along the way still. He paved the way and he takes us by the hand as he perfects our faith. That is if we give him our attention. If we entrust ourselves to him. Okay, mile number 7. This is when it gets really tough. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross. When it's difficult, when we struggle, we remember Jesus endured suffering for the sake of the joy that would come afterwards. Friends, nothing worthwhile comes easily, does it? Joy is always the result of completing something difficult. I never want to go for a run, but I never regret it afterwards. If I do get to the end of the coast to coast on a third attempt, I think probably the joy will be even greater for having failed twice before. Mile number 8, for the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning the shame, or despising the shame. Crucifixion was designed by the Romans to be as humiliating as possible for the criminal. But for Jesus, his focus on the joy set before him was more powerful than the shame of his suffering. And though we're unlikely to ever face something like that, we too can let the shame of our struggle cloud the hope of the gospel. And we needn't. We can feel despondent about our struggles, and it can make us cynical about moving forward. But brothers and sisters, none of this struggle is wasted. And every step forward is a step closer to joy, albeit through the difficulty. And as we look to Jesus together, we have nothing to be ashamed of, however much we struggle on the way. We can scorn the shame of our struggles and take another small step forward. And where is Jesus as we fix our eyes on him through all this? Mile number 9, he is sat down. You might know how good it feels to sit down when you finish a long walk or a long run. Well, he is sat down, and what a place he occupies. Sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Can you imagine him there? Fix your eyes on him and keep on going. We can't give up now, can we? We've come so far, we can't stop now. We can't drift away. We're joined to Jesus together. So even when it's tough, we have nothing to be ashamed of. Christ's journey has made ours possible. He has paved the way and he guides us as we go. He finished the race and sat down in the highest place. Let's fix our eyes on him and run the race together.